Hey everyone, this is Dave Coryell, president of Delcor. In this episode, I have Andrew Leggett, our cybersecurity director, and Chris Ecker, our chief technology officer, joining me to talk about that extremely interesting topic. It actually turns out to be one of encryption. You know, what is it? Why do we need to use it? And really, I think we get into the heart of it towards the last third of this discussion around what do we do about it in the association community and as an association exec. What do you need to know? And as an IT team or partner, what do you need to make sure is addressed? So without any more, you know, waiting on the conversation about encryption, let's get going.
Welcome to Reboot IT, brought to you by Delcor. We're bringing you the latest in association and nonprofit technology. And now your host, Delcor President Dave Coryell.
So I have Andrew and Chris, Andrew Leggett, Chris Ecker here with me today because a topic that's come up recently is encryption. It's something that I'm seeing in more and more newsletters or conversations, and I think there's some confusion out there about it. So as part of our cybersecurity / keeping up with Microsoft themes that we're doing in season 5, thought we'd bring in some experts to really explain it to us. So thanks for taking some time out, gentlemen. And I appreciate, as always, your expertise. I think we should start at the top, which is, what is encryption? I mean, I know what the word means, and most people know what it means, but what does it really do for people? Like, what are we talking about?
Encryption, right, in layman's terms, right, protects the contents of a message, right, or data, or whatever it is being sent across the internet. So you're protecting validity, right? The validity of the data. The data that you're sending across or the message that you're sending across has not been tampered with or compromised or changed as it moved from point A to point B, right? If it's properly encrypted, it will ensure that the same message or data that is sent is also received. So that's kind of the...
builds trust by the recipient of the data.
So there's value proposition one is you can trust what you're getting is what someone sent. Is there also a privacy value proposition in it? Is it also offering some level of ensured privacy in the message?
In the contents of the message, yeah. Like the contents of the message have not been tampered with. That doesn't necessarily mean they haven't been intercepted, right? That's still possible unless you're in like a secure tunnel or a VPN. But if you're sending it open wire, right, the data or the message could be intercepted. But the fact that it's encrypted means, you know, if done with proper encryption, that it's virtually useless to whoever's intercepted it, right? That it's unbreakable for them, right? They can't get into it to see what the contents are. So it ensures that validity of the file.
And even from in larger environments where there may be various levels of administrators involved and potentially, you know, inadvertent or, you know, I hate to say it, you know, someone on purpose attempting to maybe read someone else's email, right? If messages are even sent internally, right, from one person within an organization to another, right, if the email message is sent with the encryption applied, that ensures that an administrator can't come along later and even restore that message from backup and read it. So it definitely secures the contents even within an org.
And I think that's part of, yeah, thank you, Chris, because I think that's, and Andrew, I think that's part of it that brought this up is when you're in Microsoft Outlook and you see that encrypt this message as an option, you know, send encrypted or whatever the actual menu bar says, if you don't know what that means and you don't have any context or understanding of what's going to happen on the other end, then what's the point, right? So you might think you have a layer of security or privacy that you don't, or you might have something available to you that you would find useful, like in your use case right there, Chris, with, you know, something that's going from a team member to HR and they want it to be private. That might be an application for making sure the message is encrypted. But what you both said was it's not just, which I always think about it from an email contents perspective, but it's also, does it apply to the, you mentioned data, Andrew, does it apply to attachments and, you know, does it bundle the whole thing up and encrypt it and send it? Or is it just the yes. Okay, good.
In the context of an email, right? We're talking about email encryption because you can encrypt files on your hard drive and things like that. But as far as email encryption, yes, right? Whatever attachment or data or message is contained within it, if you bundle the whole thing encrypted, right, then yes, it protects the validity of that data.
Okay. So, you know, we have an off-ramp right here just for a second to detour into what you just said about encrypting files. Now, when I set up a new Mac, you know, when I get into it, it asks me if I want to encrypt my hard drive. I'm pretty sure it's one of the questions. Now you say yes.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So I'm encrypting my hard drive. What is that doing for me?
So essentially the encryption of a hard drive ensures that if you were to, let's say, lose your laptop, or if your laptop was stolen, someone cannot remove that hard drive and attach it to another system and read it.
Okay.
That's the most practical application of that.
Okay. So it protects it that only this laptop can access and use that hard drive when I'm authenticated.
Right. Or another laptop that, right, if you're, you know, right, if for some reason you need to move that laptop to another, or that hard drive to another system, you could do that as long as you then authenticate and unlock the drive.
All right.
But yes, yeah.
Okay. All right. Good to know. So back onto the on-ramp, the main topic that got us started here was encrypting email. And my understanding from a conversation that Andrew, you and I had about a week or so ago is that it's not one size fits all. It can be really simple or it can be complicated. So what are the different flavors or types of options that you have as far as encryption is involved?
Again, for email, most people out there are probably using some flavor of Microsoft, probably, you know, Exchange Online. So probably the most basic one that everybody already has access to, right? If you have an E3 license or above, which is pretty standard, I think, for most users or most staff, you have the Microsoft encryption method, right? If you go into Outlook under format, I want to say, or data, there's an option that says, right, encrypt email. I'll tell you where it is right now. And under options, right, there's encrypt and sign. We'll talk about sign as well. But encrypt is exactly that. You click on it, you click on your organization and say, right, encrypt only, do not forward. There's a couple of flavors there, but essentially what that's doing is it's using Microsoft's kind of standard encryption to encrypt that file and send it to any recipient of your choice. If the recipient is also a Microsoft client, right, that makes it really easy. The recipient will receive that message in their inbox. It'll have a little padlock next to it. So just on quick view, you can see that this message is encrypted. But for the recipient, there'll be no real hoops to jump through, right? It's a Microsoft to Microsoft transaction, we'll call it. And on each end, right, it's being encrypted and then decrypted, and it's showing up in the user's inbox. So pretty easy, pretty standard, and you can know that message is secure. It gets a little bit different when you send to somebody outside Microsoft. So you send to a Gmail account. In that instance, there's something called Microsoft Purview. And this is something you need to enable on your tenant. And it's a couple of PowerShell scripts that, you know, that your IT management should be able to handle. But you enable that, And it essentially allows an external user to open that message within a contained Microsoft space, if that makes sense. So what would end up happening is your Gmail recipient would get a message. They would not get the message you sent. They would instead get an automated message from Microsoft that says, hey, Andrew is sending you a encrypted email. Click on this button to open up Microsoft Purview. And that would open up a web portal that the user would have to authenticate into, right? They would sign in using a one-time code that would be sent to their email to ensure that it's them. And then they would be able to view that message within this website, within this web portal, the secure web portal, I should say, and see the contents and the attachments and the message contained within. So, right, for most, you know, most organizations going from Microsoft to Microsoft, right, that tends to be the big mail provider. It wouldn't be too much of a hassle, but for any recipient outside of that, they would have to jump through that extra hoop, we'll call it, to ensure that they could read the secure message. So that's how the default encryption for Office 365 works when using Outlook or Webmail, right, or any Microsoft product.
Okay, that was very clearly explained. I appreciate that. Anything to add to that, Chris?
No, I think Andrew covered that completely.
Is there?
Thank
yeah.
you for that. That was great.
Yeah, it's one of your strengths for sure, Andrew. Very, you know, concise yet logical. And my question though is should everyone just be using that then? Or is it, you know, why wouldn't you encrypt your emails? Is there a downside?
Going outside of the Microsoft space, you have that additional right hoop to jump through. So that's the biggest downside. But I mean, if you know that your external recipient is Microsoft, I think you're safe in doing just that. That being said, right, you know, do you need to encrypt? Like, hey, are we meeting at the bar at 4 p.m.? Right, probably not. You know, I mean, I don't know that you have to go that far, but
If meeting at four, you might want to encrypt that, right?
I guess that's true.
Right, right. It's 4 p.m. somewhere. So, yeah. So all right. So use it as appropriate when you want secured, when you want privacy and you want to ensure the message you're sending is 100%, you're confident, the person who's receiving it is confident that it was what was sent. Sensitive information or, you know, all right, gotcha. So that's built in. If it's inside, great, easy breezy. If it's outside the Microsoft tenant, it's extra steps. Most people probably can follow those steps and receive your email. Unintended consequence is somebody might be confused by it or think it is a security scam and it spins up some extra activity for the user and you. If you encrypt sending it to outside, I imagine could have an unintended consequence of sending to outside a Microsoft environment. So that's the basic built-in. I think you said everyone has access to that. IT managers need to think about, I think you mentioned in some PowerShell scripts or enabling it within the tenant and then educating users about it, right? Association execs have to think about knowing when to apply the tool appropriately. That's the way I'm interpreting what I heard. Are there other options or considerations?
There are. So you can kind of take it to the next level if you want and do something called an S/MIME cert or encrypting with S/MIME. This is more complex and it's much more limited in its scope. So let me explain how this one works. So in this instance, you have to purchase first and foremost a certificate, right? You have to go to a certificate authority and purchase a certificate under your name and under your email address and have this certificate renewed every year, 2 years or whatever it is. And attach that certificate to your Outlook or your webmail or your phone or whatever the source is that you're going to send this message from. And that, right? That puts that certificate in your certificate store, and then you can use that certificate to encrypt emails, all right? Now, the catch here is, in order to encrypt an email, in order for the recipient to be able to get it or read it, you need to have an initial handshake where you exchange certificates, right? Because they're not going to be able to decrypt your message without your certificate. So that means the sender also has to have a certificate. They also have to go through the process of signing up for it, right? Ensuring it's linked to their name, assigning it to their Office 365 and all that stuff. And then you and that person need to do an initial handshake where you trade those certificates, so that any subsequent message you send is then encrypted by that certificate. So all that being said, right, there's a lot of setup that goes into that, but it ensures that no matter what, right, Microsoft or not, it doesn't really matter there, right? You've got this certificate handshake happening and this encryption decryption process that's happening, not only from a validity standpoint, but from an authentication standpoint, right? In this instance, you're not only certain of the contents of the message, you're certain of the recipient and the sender. Like, I know if Chris Ecker and I have this set up, which we actually do, right? If we're sending it in this manner, not only can he encrypt it, he can sign it. And I know that not only are the contents valid, but I know it's him, right? It's not somebody else, right? It doesn't have... authenticity, right? I get all that stuff confused, right? So it's integrity plus authenticity plus non-repudiation, right? Meaning that they can't deny that they've sent it, right? Because you've got this whole encryption thing going on. So it takes it to the next level in adding authenticity to it, but also, as you can see, requires a lot. Right, because I can purchase this certificate for myself and Chris can purchase it, and then we have this secure channel. But the second I try and send it to you, Dave, it's not going to work. Right. You need a certificate, and you and I need to trade certificates, and then we can do this whole thing. So additional steps for additional security. Right.
And all of that, those certificates and subsequent keys, that all forms the basis of one's digital ID, that you'll see that term thrown around there quite a bit.
So Chris,
in this realm,
expand on that. Your digital ID, should everyone have one? Is it for CEOs, HR, and finance? When is that applicable?
I think if you want to, participate in secure message transfer and if you want to be able to or need to sign and encrypt message communication, then you're going to need a digital ID. I think as we move forward, there's probably going to be more digital IDs tied to things like, TSA and things of that nature.
Okay.
And it's probably important to note that with that certificate, right, you buy that certificate, and in order to have both the encryption and the signing, right, so the integrity and the authenticity, the other person needs to have it. But if you just have it, you can still do that authenticity part, right? That's like the digital ID. You can have a certificate, you can sign all of your email. The contents may not be encrypted, but your recipient knows without a shadow of a doubt that it is you, right? Because if they were to get a spoofed mail from it says AndrewLeggett@Delcor.com, but it doesn't have my certificate on it. It doesn't have my digital signature. They know that that email has been spoofed, right? They know it didn't come from me. It's just posing as me. So there is reason to do that, even if you're not going to set up those secure connections with, other people with their own certificates.
That, as you started, you said, okay, you can step it up a level. And it sounds like it's definitely a stepped up level, right? And it's very intentional and participatory between specific people. So it's not happenstance that you have this level of security in a different sense of the word, security around your messaging and and file shares, et cetera. They're things you're sharing through email. Is there another level, or is that those are the two basic, ways that we can approach this in the community?
There's kind of like a middle ground that it's not on par with that whole SMRM cert or that cert based messaging. But you can kind of go a step above the whole default Office 365 thing and leverage the use of a third party tool, right? Something like Mimecast or any other number of, specific email, not corporations, right? But email providers that specify this. I think there's like Secure Grid or Secure Send, or there's a number of them out there. But usually what's common about these is they provide a way with a plugin, right, and a monthly service that kind of mimics what that Microsoft thing does. So you send an email encrypted from your Outlook. And the way they ensure this encryption is that it never actually leaves that service. So with Mimecast, the way it works is you have a plugin, you send a message through that plugin. It gets sent to the recipient, and regardless of the recipient, whoever they are, they get a message saying, you've been sent a secure message, click here to open it, right? And then that takes them into a Mimecast portal or, again, whatever third-party vendor you're using, into that proprietary web portal that is verified with either a username and password or a one-time code or some way of getting in there. And then all of that email that's being communicated is handled within that portal, right? So the recipient now almost has like an inbox of sorts, like a separate inbox that's specific to the sender, right? And they have all of the email that was ever sent to them in that. So if you have this constant back and forth, right, unlike Microsoft's where it's kind of a one shot every time, these services tend to provide the recipients with their own little temporary mailbox that has all of the messages that you've ever sent. And oftentimes you can set expirations on those, or you could not, so that the recipient has a portal in which to work securely with whatever data is being sent there. So it still has that kind of hoop that Microsoft baseline has, but with a few more bells and whistles that make it easier to manage from the recipient's end, right? Like the ability to send from that portal or create their own encrypted messages from that portal back to the sender, and managing past emails and things.
Sure.
Like that.
And this is something like our payroll company, our financial institution, I get those from them, right? I'll get hey, you have a secure message, click here. Which of course I never do until I verify that they actually sent me a message, because now you got to call them and say, hey, did you send me a message? Why don't you just tell me what's in it? But that's where we are now. You laid out, so what we've done, Chris, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I was going going to say that the ability to send email securely, right, and does check that box of, if you are sending PII or HIPAA or various things that fall under those requirements, it checks the box for compliance. Doesn't, right? It, if you think about it, not as secure as the other method where you exchange, keys with one another, because still someone that has access to a recipient's email, right? So a recipient receives one of these, right? So Dave, if someone has access to your email, they could still access and read the messages from ADP, right? It's good enough from a security perspective, right? It is interesting that the most secure way is that certificate exchange that Andrew mentioned earlier, and just kind of being, from a geek perspective, that's the coolest way.
It seems like the most work too, though, is that, which often the most secure thing is the most work.
Yes. And it's interesting in, right, in security textbooks, that's the typical, right, Bob and Alice, right? Bob and Alice are always the examples that are used. And in theory, that's what's taught is that is the, you exchange keys and communicate that way. And I think that's lives more at the, probably, right, when security is really a requirement. Right, FBI, CIA, those level of that level of military, that level of encrypted communication is where that is really applicable. Whereas for in the 501c community, I think the Microsoft and the Mimecast is more than acceptable.
Yes, not that it's not important, but discussing what will be on the lunch buffet at the annual meeting probably doesn't need to be encrypted, is your point.
Exactly.
Yes, that makes sense. So here's what I'm thinking about is you've laid out what we're talking about, options that have various levels of complexity and various levels of intensity as far as how secure the message may be. And then what I'm thinking about though is two things. One, how much do we feel like the association community is and should be paying attention to this? Do we feel like it's on the radar, off the radar, et cetera? And where should it be in an organization? And two, if I was if I were the CEO or the executive director, what type of expectation should I have of my IT team or IT partner as it relates to encryption? I might not understand the technology behind it, the way that the encryption works, obviously, or what the handshake algorithms are or that piece of it. But I would imagine I need to know enough to be able to ask the right questions to my team about application of encrypted email or encrypted hard drives. Does that make sense? So question one first, how much are we and how much should we be paying attention to this topic in your travels?
I think it's getting a lot more attention. I think people or organizations are getting outside pressure, right? If they're not getting inside pressure, then they're getting outside pressure from insurance providers or compliance or any regulatory agency that they're beholden to ensure that this stuff is happening, right? That, kind of Chris said, to check that compliance box. Do you have the ability to send PII properly? All of that. Or again, insurance, cybersecurity insurance and stuff like that requiring, the ability to send that stuff, or you have the ability within your organization to do these things. I think that's moving people in this direction, as well as just general kind of knowledge of this now. It's a very hot button issue. Cybersecurity is all the rage nowadays. So it's just becoming, more and more commonplace in organizations. And, I don't know. I think it's being appropriately discussed, at least from what I'm seeing. There's a lot of our clients that are interested in this type of stuff, if not already doing it.
Good. Good.
I don't think it's some well-kept secret or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it moves the cybersecurity maturity up a notch. And in this day and age, it's much easier to adopt and without a lot of added expense, right? Especially in the Microsoft realm, since this is included in business premium licensing and E3 licensing. PGP, right? Pretty good privacy has been around for, since like 91 or 92, but it was something that was very difficult to, could be difficult to implement for email. Because it was, more of that key exchange. So I think it's, moving that maturity model from a cyber perspective up without extensive expense or a time commitment.
Is that, are you serious? PGP is pretty good privacy?
Yeah.
That's a really bad product name.
Yeah, they've been around forever.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It seems like a Larry David style of company management. Yeah, it's pretty good, right? We won't worry about it being great. So, I'm glad it's successful. I didn't know what that stood for. So, thank you. I guess that leads to the kind of a closing point for me is if I'm the association exec that isn't in the tech area, but I want to make sure my team or my partner is applying this. What are there a couple of questions, key questions I should be asking the IT team or the IT partner, or you know, how do I make sure that we're taking advantage of what we have and using it at the appropriate way without getting into the nuts and bolts myself? Does that make sense?
I think any, you know, MSP or IT department worth its salt should be familiar with Office 365 at this point. It's too mm-hmm. large not
sure.
to be.
Yeah.
Right. And so knowing the capabilities of that system when it comes to encryption is something that you know everyone out there in the IT industry really should know how to do. But I'll kind of flip this backwards, right? I think if the IT or if the IT department or right MSP is any good, if the CEO is coming and saying, "Hey, what can we do about encryption, right? How are we utilizing it?" The question that a good MSP or good IT department should be saying is, "I don't know, what does our policy say?" Right? Because that's where this is going to live and die. Like, yeah, I can turn this on, but if nobody's using it, if you're not enforcing it at a policy level, then it's worthless, right? Like I can say, yep, we have encryption, but you need to have governance around that. You need to have a data confidentiality policy, right? An encryption policy, right? All of these things that govern how your organization uses this. And again, with that, the IT department can give you the tools, but you've got to develop the policy to enforce it. So
let me flip around your flip around, because if who's writing that policy, isn't IT the author of those policies based on leadership's business rules?
Based on leadership's business rules.
Okay.
Yes, right.
So there's
nowhere
education. I'm going to tell you what I can do. You're going to tell me mm-hmm. what the rules are going to be. I'm going to write a policy.
Yes. That's how I would see it, right? Nowhere is the IT department, or should they be the ones dictating what's in this policy?
Oh,
they should absolutely
out there.
Help you write it. Well,
yeah. We know they're out enough. There. We shall dictate. Yeah, we've run into them. So, yes.
But yeah, I mean, any policy really should start from the top down and should be a collaborative effort between IT and management to ensure that. Because IT is going to throw out, here's all the stuff I can do, and sure, I can enforce encryption across the board and make everybody have it, and I can buy certificates for everybody, and they can go to the nth degree with that, right? But it's up to business leaders and executives to say, well, that's not in line with our goals, right? That's not necessary, or you know, these are the things that we need to expect from our staff. And we need to ensure that the policy meets those expectations while still providing, you know, reasonable security.
Awesome. Yeah. Chris, anything to add to that?
Maybe if I was a sitting director of IT or, you know, in charge of administering and, you know, an individual organization's environment. So outside of the policies that you talked about, Andrew, I might ensure, you know, I would probably work to understand how it works and what's required to implement it, start to test it. And then, you know, it could be made available, because we run into situations where all of a sudden organizations need to adopt this. They need to be able to send encrypted email because of some requirement. And right, I think you put yourself in a good spot if you're like, oh yeah, we already have that enabled. Let me, or you know, it's capable, right? We've tested it. I know how it works. Here, let me enable you that for you, so that you can do what you need to do really quickly. Right. Then you go back and definitely develop the policy. Not to say the policy is not important. This is kind of, you know, in parallel with that. Just, I guess my point is, we run into situations where it's a need, and there's typically a high priority. It's a high priority need. Something that we need to get this done quickly because we need to be in compliance in order to be able to send whatever, you know, important information they're sending. Just so that's a suggestion.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's a couple of tracks here. So education, and then always we're trying to balance, especially, you know, Andrew, you run into this with security, in particular cybersecurity, is we're trying to balance the user experience with the value of implementing layers of security, which ultimately become obstruction in a user experience, generally speaking. And somewhere there's a level of risk we're willing to tolerate. So that's what we're talking about is the association execs, hey, you need to tell me before you go rampant with all these rules and certificates and keys and costs, you need to tell me the spectrum of things we can do, what your thoughts on what we should do, test it, and see how it affects user experience and make sure there are no unintended consequences. And then help, we based on what we come up with from the business rules and expectations and risk tolerance perspective, craft our policies that they then can be such that they can be enforced. That's the wisdom you two are telling to the community right now, the way I interpret it.
I think that's a good interpretation, yeah.
Now, Andrew, did you get to use all of the big words you had on your list today throughout this discussion?
Sure, I had some more.
You have more? Do you want to just rattle them off, or you're good and you'll save them for next time?
Save those. Yeah, right. I got to save some.
All right, Chris, are there any words of wisdom or anecdotes or parables that you want to share before we leave the community with this new insight into what they should be doing about a topic? Like, who knew we could talk about encryption for 40 minutes? And it would be so exciting, right? But we did.
Nothing else here. It was a good discussion.
Good. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you again, gentlemen. I appreciate your time. I know everyone's always busy. So thanks for sharing these thoughts with the association community. Okay. Well, I did not expect that, but I thought we would have a good short, like, stand-up podcast of 12 minutes talking about encryption. But it turns out it's actually pretty interesting and certainly is important. And there's plenty for association execs to pull from what Andrew and Chris shared. So if you have any questions, please feel free to get in touch. If you have any topics you want us to cover, please feel free to let us know. Until next time, thank you and take care.
That's it for today's episode of Reboot IT. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast directory and leave us a 5-star review while you're there. You can reach us through the Delcor website and keep up with Dave and the rest of the Delcorians by following the Delcor social media channels. See you next time.